This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the Todd Herman Show, heard weekday morning 6 to 9 right here on KTTH. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So Amy Coney Barrett is in the middle of a marathon day of questioning. Senator Mike Crapo, Republican from Idaho, is currently asking her some questions. Each senator, should they choose to use their full time at this point, get 30 minutes to ask any question they would like of Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who has been answering questions today with the poise and the temperament that you would expect from a future Supreme Court justice. Now, hoping you don't know how these hearings normally go, and let's be clear, even though we've had two recent examples, historically speaking, in the last 3 years, where we got to see this with Brett Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, most people probably don't know how this is supposed to work. And as a result of that, you've got Democrats keep asking rather specific questions on how she would rule on specific issues, including issues that are very clearly either right now for sure going to be in front of the Supreme Court due to the scheduling of them, or are almost certainly likely to be in front of the Supreme Court. No judge, no nominee should ever answer those kinds of questions. They are supposed to be impartial. They are supposed to hear specific arguments on specific cases, and they're supposed to apply the law in those specific cases, regardless of some of the big picture issues that lots of Democrats right now are asking of Amy Coney Barrett. There is something called the Ginsburg Rule, and we'll play audio of that later on from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But it's a rule that's been used by others, including, by the way, Elena Kagan, that you don't simply give a thumbs up or a thumbs down style of answer. That's not the appropriate way to answer these questions and address these issues. But since most people don't realize that, Democrats were asking those specific questions anyway, knowing that Amy Coney Barrett would not be able to answer them, shouldn't answer them, which they hope will give off the impression that she's being evasive or she's hiding her true feelings. And the pushback from Barrett came early when Dianne Feinstein, the senator from California, who knows better, tried to be specific.
If that question ever came before me, I would need to hear arguments from the litigants and read briefs and consult with my law clerks and talk to my colleagues and go through the opinion writing process. So, you know, if I give off-the-cuff answers, then I would be basically a legal pundit. And I don't think we want judges to be legal pundits. I think we want judges to approach cases thoughtfully and with an open mind.
She, of course, is 100% correct. She's 100% correct. And we should all appreciate that. But she will give you sort of a big-picture view about how she addresses cases and how she uses the law when looking at individual issues.
I think that any issue that would arise under the Affordable Care Act or any other statute should be determined by the law, by looking at the text of the statute, by looking at precedent, the same way that it would for anyone. And if there were policy differences or policy consequences, those are for this body. For the court, it's really a question of adhering to the law and going where the law leads.
Yep.
And leaving the policy decisions up to you.
Now, there continues to be a talking point from Democrats that Amy Coney Barrett was picked specifically to overturn certain laws or certain precedents, from Obamacare to abortion and gay marriage. And the implication is that she was asked her position on certain cases, that she made certain promises in order to secure this nomination. Senator Chuck Grassley, the Republican, got right to the point, so we can dispel that nonsense talking point.
Have you made any promises or guarantees to anyone about how you might rule on a case or issue that might come before you if you're confirmed to the Supreme Court?
I want to be very, very clear about this, Senator Grassley. The answer is no, and I submitted a questionnaire to this committee in which I said no. No one ever talked about any case with me. No one on the executive branch side of it. And that's one reason, you know, one reason you asked that question, I think, as a committee, is that you want to know that no nominee has made any pre-commitments. And so just as I didn't make any pre-commitments and was not asked to make any commitments on the executive branch side, I can't make any pre-commitments to this body either. It would be inconsistent with judicial independence.
Now, I know the answer to my last question, and Mr. Chairman, I'm going to reserve the rest of my time. The Democrats claim that you're being put on the Supreme Court so you can vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Is that your agenda? If confirmed, is your goal repealing the Affordable Care Act? Have you committed to the president or anyone else that you will vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act if confirmed by to the court?
Absolutely not. I was never asked, and if I had been, that would have been a short conversation.
You need to be aware of her answers in this case if you want to push back at some of the talking points that you're seeing right now. Whether you're looking at them on Twitter and Facebook or people in the office or family and friends bringing this up, you need to be able to be armed with a response. And that's why we play the clips that we play. It's not just because you need to be a better consumer of news and because you're curious about what's going on, which obviously we hope that you try to be. But it's also about pushing against these lies. Then Amy Coney Barrett was asked about whether or not she would recuse herself on issues that come up from this upcoming election. Because the writing seems very clearly on the wall that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are certainly willing to challenge the results of this election depending on how the election is actually decided.
I recently read a description by Justice Ginsburg of the process that Supreme Court justices go through in deciding whether to recuse. And it involves not only reading the statute, looking at the precedent, consulting counsel if necessary, but the crucial last step is that while it is always the decision of an individual justice, it always happens after consultation with the full court. So I can't offer an opinion on recusal without short-circuiting that entire process.
Good for her, because I imagine it's probably difficult when you're in a position like this to withhold some of your potential positions, knowing that it's going to be used against you and knowing that it's just wrong to do so. I imagine there's part of her who wants to say, hey, dum-dum, I'm not going to be able to answer that question. You know I can't. Here's why. But again, she's been so good today. So good. And unfortunately, as this day is wrapping down, and she's got at least another 2.5-3 hours to go of questioning, she's had to sit through some pretty disgusting questions from bad faith politicians. I think there are a lot of tough questions that are total from Democrats or Republicans that are totally above board and should and need to be asked. This question, however, or series of questions from Senator Mazie Hirono, the Democrat from Hawaii, who had to ask Amy Coney Barrett to actually define some legal terms because she didn't know what they meant while sitting on this Senate Judiciary Committee. Listen to this.
To ensure the fitness of nominees for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench or to any of the other positions for any of the committees on which they appear, I ask each nominee these two questions, and I will ask them of you. Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator Hirono.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
She was asked those two questions in front of her kids. That wasn't a good faith question. Not even a little bit. Maisie Hirono doesn't really care, does she? Kamala Harris is going to ask her questions of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. We believe it's going to be happening within the next 15 to 20 minutes, though we'll see, because they did not go in the same order that we expected them to go into. But when that does happen, and it will happen during the show, we will be carrying that live because of how important it is. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRantsShow. Twitter.com/JasonRantsShow, or excuse me, Facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. It's Jason Rants on Twitter. If you want to follow me there, we do now expect that the next question portion will, in fact, be Senator Kamala Harris. So don't move from the radio as that starts. We're going to be carrying that live, and we expect that to happen in the next 10 minutes or so. Until then, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
So this is an exclusive story that you will only find at KTTH.com. Suzanne Wakefield is an art teacher at Seattle's Tops K through 8, which is actually just a few blocks from the studio here in Eastlake. I didn't realize that when I was looking into this story. It's literally just a few blocks away from where we sit right now. One of her eighth grade students just was sick and tired of the teacher constantly saying, absolutely everything is racist. And so the student decided to film some of it during the remote classes. Apparently, peace is racist. The concept of peace is racist. Because this teacher gave an assignment to draw something on the theme of peace. But afterwards, this teacher realized she might have done the wrong thing.
I wanted you guys to know that I might give you guys things sometimes that might be kind of racist.
Huh?
You know, and I'm admitting it. And I want to talk about it sometimes because it infiltrates every part of our life.
Okay. I mean, when she says she wants to talk about it, she meant she wants to talk about it. Because she ended up giving this meandering and nearly incoherent stream of consciousness on how her white privilege might have been responsible for this assignment she thinks might be racist, which, by the way, the assignment is not racist.
My perspective is coming from a white privilege. I'm a white person, and I've been conditioned, and I'm trying to uncondition myself. But I just wanted you guys to know that, you know, if you believe in peace, it could mean lots of different things. But I also believe that peace is really not possible without equality and justice.
Okay.
And that's why, you know, you could have a peaceful protest and try to protest what's going on in the world. But how can you feel peace when you're a group from a minority or something that's been oppressed?
Or something.
And does not have the same privileges as white people do, you know? And so when I come across as, you know, I don't really believe that peace is possible personally unless we have equal justice first. And that's a fight that's going on and has been going on for a long time.
The audio goes on and on and on, and we'll try to fit in some more of it, which, by the way, you can find right now at KTTH.com, or just text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. But I feel bad for her. I legitimately feel bad for her. She subscribes to a pretty radical view of progressivism, which believes that white people are inherently racist, even, by the way, if they don't know it, if they don't do anything obviously racist. You can accuse them of microaggressions and hidden words, coded language, dog whistles. And the only way to defeat their racism is, number one, to acknowledge and accept it. And then, of course, promote some pretty far-left policies that are meant to destroy systems of white supremacy. Now, if that is her view, That is hers to have, right? I just feel bad because I don't think she's a racist. I don't think her assignment is racist. She's just been, and I guess I'll borrow her term, she has been conditioned into thinking that she is a racist. There are a lot of well-intentioned and good-hearted progressives who have adopted this belief that they are problematic. And they've been guilted into pursuing a political agenda of radicals. Now, not all progressives are like this, but too many are. And based on this, it feels like she is one of those too many in that category. Now, regardless of her views or really of her intention here, which, again, I don't think it was a nefarious intent. She has no right. She has no responsibility to thrust her views onto art students. They don't need to know her views on white privilege, nor, by the way, do they need to know her views on Trump, which she proudly expressed.
Our country is divided. Our leader is pushing that. He's not an advocate for peace, our leader, or unity, like Obama was. No, unity, peace, people coming together, which is really hard to do because there's so many equality issues and injustice happening that people are fighting against.
It is true. People are fighting right now. But again, you shouldn't be bringing this into the classroom. It is quite simply wrong. They have no place in the classroom. Period. Regardless of those political beliefs. I don't think a teacher should come into the classroom, especially an art class, talking about how she loves President Trump, shouting MAGA the entire time. That's not what she's there for. And so what exactly is the point of doing stories like this? What's the point? Because I've done these stories before. I'm going to do some more of these stories later, even this week and next week, because I've got so much of the material. What's the point? And it's a question that I asked myself before I actually hit the publish button when I posted on KTTH.com or put it on our show sheet to talk about here on the show. Because I don't think she should be fired. I don't even think she should be disciplined. I'm fine with the principal, and I think that this is important, having a conversation with her to tell her, hey, I don't know if you realize this, but you are getting awfully political in your classroom. Could you maybe chill out a little bit? And I certainly hope that people will refrain from, like, emailing her or calling her, which I don't think is appropriate, unless, of course, you've got a kid in her class. The point of these stories is twofold. Number one, to get parents more generally aware of the bias in the classroom so they can actually have some conversations with their kids. If you've got a student who is in a classroom, especially in Seattle, but don't think this is just a Seattle problem, as we found out last week and we'll find out later on this week, this is not just a Seattle problem. If you've got a kid, you need to be talking to them about this kind of bias. Have conversations so they know what to potentially expect and how they need to respond, which includes telling you about it. But number two, the other reason is, especially why I named the teachers, is to get teachers more generally aware of how they're allowing their political views to interfere with what their main goal of teaching is. Their goal should be to teach kids how to express themselves, not what they need to say to express themselves. And that's important. Now, if you want to watch the video that was recorded by this student and read more about this, because again, there's like 6 minutes worth of audio almost, so obviously we can't play it all on the show. Go ahead and text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. When I send you the link, read it, of course, but also post it on Facebook, post it on Twitter. Let's amplify this so people know that it's wrong. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on KTTH live on this Tuesday afternoon. We're expecting in the next 15 to 20 minutes Senator Kamala Harris asking questions of Judge Amy Coney Barrett. And we're going to be carrying it live, commercial free in its entirety because it's incredibly important. She is running for vice president. When she previously asked questions of Brett Kavanaugh, she was rather vicious. And there were folks on the left at the time, I remember, also saying she went a little bit too far in the way she was going after Brett Kavanaugh. The question today becomes, who will show up? Is it the senator who went after Brett Kavanaugh, or will it be someone who is a little bit more reserved, at least in her tone and approach, but using this time to essentially pitch to the American people why she should be elected vice president and Joe Biden president? So there's a lot on the line here, including how Amy Coney Barrett is just basically treated. Just how she is treated. Will she be treated with respect? Will she be able to answer questions without being cut off the way that Senator Harris cut off Brett Kavanaugh in some of the, in my view, disingenuous questions? All of this has implications, so we're going to be carrying that live. But before then, let's talk about Governor Inslee's moratorium for evictions. He is about to sign this moratorium, which would extend the rule into the new year. And under this moratorium, you can't kick someone out of a home for refusal to pay rent. And I think just talking about it generally, I suppose one could say it's well-intentioned. Unfortunately, it's horribly written because it doesn't actually require that the tenant has to prove they can't pay their rent due to the coronavirus. And so when I say it's well-intentioned, I'm not even 100% sure. Because they made the choice. They made the choice to not force the tenant to show any need in this case, which, of course, will lead to bad faith tenants taking advantage of this. We've talked about it in the past. Renata Rollins, the council member over in Olympia, while she had a job and collecting a paycheck and had savings, she chose not to pay her rent. That is a problem. And so this moratorium completely ignores the issues that landlords right now are facing because they too have bills to pay. Mortgages, utilities, paying the gardener, paying the handyman. Can we still say handyman or does it have to be handy person?
No, I think you can say handyman.
Okay. Well, you let the record show. I got a pass from Peyton for gendering handyman. That person comes down, fixes some things, you got to pay them. Including as they fix things in an apartment that someone is choosing not to pay for. And the landlords aren't getting helped at all.
I really, really, really need someone to see this and say that this is not right. This is not right that a landlord has to take the whole burden on their own.
That's a first-time landlord. Her name is Chastity Bryant. She rents out one apartment complex in Tacoma. Unfortunately, as she tells Q13, that one tenant stopped paying back in March. And as a consequence, Chastity, she's down thousands of dollars in unpaid rent and delinquent utility bills.
I don't want to get so far behind to where I drown. You know what I mean? I got three little kids. I can't afford this. I didn't expect this.
She's got kids that she's trying to take care of. She is a small business owner, and she is getting hurt by this eviction moratorium. And as a result of that, she's having to make some really, really hard decisions right now.
Okay, something has to give. I can't keep. Do I pay their light bill or do I pay my light bill this month? Because I don't want the liens to add up.
you can hear the emotion in her voice. She is near tears. What about her, Jay Inslee? Governor Inslee, what about chastity? What about her reasonable concerns? Does she sound unreasonable to you? Does she sound like a greedy, evil landlord? Which is how landlords in this state are treated by a lot of folks on the left. Jay Inslee doesn't talk about this. And by not talking about it, it means he's not offering any solutions, no help. Is she undeserving of help? Is she undeserving of any kind of solution to a legitimate problem that she did not cause? Inslee did. Now, there has been, I've heard, in response to some of these concerns, one really, really bad talking point. And they'll tell you, actually, landlords, you're going to get paid what you're due. They just don't have to pay it right now. But once this is done, they do have to pay you what was owed. Do you think the people who haven't paid since March are going to suddenly have the money to give to this landlord, to any landlord? Do you legitimately think that? Do you think they're going to make good? Because there are two types of people here. The bad faith people who are choosing not to pay, the Renata Rollins of the world, who I don't trust is going to pay anything back, and the people who legitimately can't afford their rent because they're out of work, you think all of a sudden they're just going to be able, come January 1st, assuming this moratorium doesn't continue, you think all of a sudden they're going to be able to pay their rent?
The people who haven't paid since March because they can't afford it are going to be able to afford 7 to 10 months worth of rent. Okay.
Huh? It's just rather remarkable. And of course, there are so many stories like this. For example, here's another landlord, Dan Lean, to Q13.
The rent moratorium, I understand some people are hurting, but I think some of these people, after 7 or 8 months, are going to say, I can't pay it. And so that landlord is going to be out that money, and I don't think the state can reimburse him.
Yeah, they're not going to. And we're in a really tricky spot because there are other states that have these moratoriums on the books. But according to Rob Trickler, who's the president of the Washington Landlord Association, he says this.
We're the only state on the West Coast that's protecting elective non-payers as well as folks that are genuinely suffering from a COVID-related hardship.
And so what are some of these folks doing? What are some of these landlords doing?
But primarily they're selling their rentals to save what they can.
They're selling their rentals in a market that's not going to stay all that healthy for too much longer. And probably what's the worst feeling in the world, especially if you're Chastity, who's the mother of three and owes a heck of a lot of money, is that you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Who knows what's going to happen on December 31st? Who knows if our reserves run out? Then what do we do? How do I feed my babies?
Why is it that her concerns are not being addressed? And yet, the concerns of a bunch of folks that don't actually exist, thankfully, because we know that in the state of Washington, like around the country, it is still a low percentage of the population that legitimately cannot afford their rent. Why is it that those people who don't exist, they get this kind of moratorium, but the people who are there literally in tears, wondering how they're going to pay their own bills as a result of a policy, they're completely ignored? I don't like virtue signaling, do I?
You absolutely hate virtue signaling.
What's a better democratic position to take? I'm going to care for the person who can't afford to pay their rent, or I am going to care for the landlords who are greedy?
Care for the person who can't pay their rent.
Yeah. Because that turns you into a hero. and yet you haven't even come up with a policy that addresses just those people. You create a policy that makes it really, really easy for literally anybody to just say, yeah, I'm done, I'm not going to pay. And shame on this governor for doing that. Especially if you're not going to help people like Chastity. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to go into today's politicking, play some more audio from the day number two of the Supreme Court confirmation hearing of Amy Coney Barrett. And we will be playing live commercial-free the moment that Kamala Harris starts to ask her questions of Amy Coney Barrett.